Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello everyone, it's Wednesday afternoon, the 11th of May 2022, and you're listening to the Tillage Podcast. Another edition of the Irish Farmers Journal has just gone to print, which means that it is that time of the week, Ian, where I'm joined by my colleague Andy Doyle, tillage editor, to run through your key tillage news stories of the week. So Andy, we're back to normal again this week in that we are doing this virtually, but you've been on the road plenty over the past few days from what I gather. So tell me, what have you seen out and about on your travels?
Well, Stephen, I went down south to do an in the fields for this week in the paper, and it's a great joy this time of the year to drive along the road and see lovely bulky crops filling up, relatively uniform, would appear to be filled with great potential. It's just such a joy to see that. Probably the only thing that can beat it in the tillage world is having combines reporting that they're running short of trailers because of the big yields. So it's a great start for the year, but probably it's fair to say it's not universal in every field. As we've reported before, there's certainly a number of fields out there that have a fair bit of virus in them. And I'm saying virus because it's not, as I look at it at least, it's not typical or classical barley yellow dwarf virus, even though that's what we choose to call it, in that you have uniform pale plants rather than uniform plants with a half or one third yellow leaf on all the leaves on an individual stem. It's not like that. So it may very well be one of the number of different viruses without being the more serious barley yellow dwarf virus. And indeed, it's probably fair to say we don't know which of all the viruses is most extreme, because we've never really known up to now what particular viruses that we have in fields and the ones that we're dealing with. But anyway, that aside, the crops that are clean and good, they are clean. There's no major issues that I saw with Septoria anywhere, with yellow rust or brown rust anywhere. The only one that I did see, and it was kind of quite bad, I was in a field of spring oats, early sown spring oats, if I'm not mistaken, because it was at growth stage 31, and a big bulky leafy crop, not uniform in colour by any manner of means, but a bulky crop. But the level of infection of mildew on the lower leaves was completely indicative of what we used to see years ago when you'd plough up very fertile lay ground, that humidity that was coming off the ground, in a sense making the leaf soft and keeping the humidity up in the canopy and giving mildew a really good start. We're talking about leaves here that have 60 to 80% leaf cover with mildew, while 5% would make any of us annoyed and wonder what we should have done a while ago. But that's indicative of the disease. You know, give it half a chance and it'll jump in and get away. Mm-hmm. It looked as if it had been sprayed. Certainly there was no disease whatsoever on any of the upper leaves, but on the same or in the same crop, there was quite a bit of, I'm going to use the phrase, irregular colouring on the leaves. A lot of kind of parallel swatting, yellow and green, running up the veins, etc. And in some instances, kind of canary yellow on the edges. it may be transient. It may be something that is quite real. It looked, if you were to try and put a definition on it, it probably looked more like magnesium deficiency than anything else. But I still wouldn't like to say that it was magnesium deficiency, because it didn't have other elements of the characteristics of that particular trace element deficiency. Slipping back, winter barley had, I was in crops that were heading stroke head out, and ones that are just barely showing awns on individual plants at this stage. So not even at the paintbrush stage on average across the field. That was at the weekend. They may very well be at that stage now and possibly further on. But again, I've been on the road today in different parts of the country, and I still see fields out there that are barely coming to paintbrush stage. I'm reckoning that it's not so much late planting as probably variety, with some of the old reliables like cassia being kind of slower to throw heads out at this time of the year. And maybe I'm mainly looking at a variety difference, because if you take one extreme and look at KWS Jayu, which is very early, and cassia, which is probably amongst the latest, and then in between, there's a lot of variability that can occur. So, but other than that, winter barley was very clean. Saw no BYDV in any of the winter barley crops I was in, but certainly saw it in the winter wheat crops. Wasn't in any winter oats that I can recall. Spring barley was generally good, but in actual fact, I still saw quite a lot of variability in spring barley crops going along. Like a lot of places where there was quite poor areas in fields, quite backward area in fields, areas with very poor establishment, areas that had definitely been eaten off by rabbits at this stage. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of all out there. And I also saw a very, very nice crop of spring barley, very well established, tillering, two tillers on it already, four leaf stage. But it had been sprayed with something recently, and there was a good bit of yellow stroke white blotching on the leaves. Not scorch, just a reaction, probably as much to do with frost on the night following application or something like that. We've seen this before. I'm pretty sure that the crop will grow out of it almost exclusively, but it just makes you look at it and wonder what's after happening when you walk into it for the first time. Other than that, then beans, winter beans being kind of sprayed, probably mid-flowering stage. Spring beans from probably 4 to 8 leaves in total of all the different ones that I'd seen, generally good, well established. Thought some of them might have been a little bit further on. Could happen that maybe, like the spring barley, they were being caught with a little bit of dryness for a while, and we'd hope that the relatively recent rain might inject a bit of life into them. And then maize was the other one that was kind of very apparent. There was a lot of maize, and there certainly, to my eyes, I seem to be looking at a lot of maize under plastic driving along the road. Whether that represents an increase or just the movement of the acres to beside the roads that I'm travelling on, I don't know. And we won't know until the Area 8 figures come out. But at least it's happening. And a lot of that maize under plastic was only sown last week, when the frost at night kind of began to stop. And for that reason, it became very obvious to me that there was quite a lot of these that had bits of plastic blown off already, which was, I thought, relatively quick to have plastic blown off, because I didn't think we had seen the worst of the weather at that stage. But since then, we've seen quite a lot of windy weather. And if some of it can blow off easy, I do wonder and worry about whether the rest of it will stay there or not. There was also an amount of maize, I would say an increasing amount of maize sown in the open, and it had been sown earlier. And I saw one crop, and it was actually already established and well established, only at the one leaf stage, granted, but it had established well, nearly full germination, I would have thought, looking at that. So that's kind of a spread of what I saw in my travels down into parts of Munster and Leinster.
I take it, Andy, that any hints of moisture pressure are now long since gone with the arrival of last week's rain?
Probably, Stephen, but it's fair to say that there was less rain down the country, and also, you know, little enough rain in parts of the northeast. So it just depends on how much of it you got. Certainly, some of the spring barley crops that I'm looking at looked on balance as if they were poorly established because of lack of moisture, either uneven establishment or shallow planting or a combination of both, one or the other. So chances are, if they got enough rain, that those plants will come. But it means that there's an unevenness in the crop. And any crop that has open patches in it, in my book, is always much more susceptible to barley yellow dwarf virus. Whatever it is that that combination of brown and green does, it almost attracts the aphids on the wing to drop down here rather than to allow themselves to be blown on in the wind into somebody else's field. So, you know, that sets crops up to be at higher risk than maybe they should be for the planting date that was used and for the establishment date that occurred. So I just pass that out as a kind of something to consider for people, that if you have some of those, and the worse it is, the bigger the risk in my book. Certainly in walking through the winter crops, particularly the ones where BYDV was visible, we could again see aphids multiplying on the leaves. So if they're multiplying for a few days at all in that scenario, you don't be long until you get aphids produced with wings. They'll rise up and fly away, and there's the virus being transmitted from one field to the other. So again, the more BYDV that's present in the locality on a winter crop, the greater the risk to spring crops in that area, with the bigger risk being to later establishing crops or poorly established crops.
Okay. Andy, looking ahead now over the coming week, what's going to be going on in fields? What the growers need to be cognizant of? What are you writing about in management this week?
Stephen, I think there's a couple of things in particular. Like we are past the 1st of May. So the first week of May is generally T2 timing in winter wheat. And, you know, all the crops that I walked into recently, every one of them now had the flag leaf fully exposed. And I use the word exposed rather than emerged. Technically, it's the same thing. But when you're spraying, it is best if you can actually have a leaf that's flattening out a bit, where you can deposit spray on the full area of the leaf. A leaf that's still kind of curled up at the base, even though it's fully emerged, it's difficult to put the fungicide in there. And, you know, just think about where you see Septoria on the flag leaf. You'll frequently get it right down at the base, at the axil of the leaf where it joins the stem, because that area of the leaf is frequently not sprayed with fungicide. And when the disease is moving internally in the crop and a droplet lands on the surface, they all roll down to either the tip of the leaf on the one side or the base of the leaf on the other side. And the base of the leaf then is where it gets going, and that's where it can do quite a bit of harm. So I always like to be able to have the flag leaf open enough to hit it. And if you only have your T1 spray on for a fortnight and your flag leaf is coming out, my inclination is to rob the few days of cover just to try and get slightly more openness on the flag leaf so that you can get better spray coverage across the full leaf. So that's the job on winter wheat. Winter barley, yeah, look, when the heads are coming out, that's your final spray on winter barley. Final spray, whatever you're using for Rinco net blotch control, plus Falpid put in there also for to help against ramularia. So that's your winter barley.
And just on that age-old question, when do you apply the head spray? Whenever the ons are the paintbrush stage, 50% out, 100% out, because every grower's strategy seems to be different.
Yeah, and if you look at research from different times, you equally get different answers. My view would be that paintbrush stage to me is a tad early, unless that's the stage that has suited you to fit in with previous sprays. But I just think it's a tad early. There's a lot of growth left in a crop from that point forward. If you have a very clean crop, then arguably there's going to be no pressure in that crop, and that timing would probably be adequate, and it certainly would suit ramularia control probably that bit better to get a deeper penetration of the fungicide into the crop. But if you're at late paintbrush stage and you're already 3 weeks since your last spray, well, rather than trying to fit one in the middle, I would be inclined to just say, well, I'm going for it now. But my preferable time is not paintbrush, but rather when you move from paintbrush to ear emergence. Like traditionally in winter barley, we always waited for the ears to be out to apply the final spray. Then the most recent round of research from Chagas says that you apply it just prior to ear emergence so that you have it on ahead of when ramularia might begin to move, because any control we have of ramularia is purely preventative. And if it is moved before you spray, you cannot stop that disease from developing. So that's the preferable one. You know, get it on before you see grain sites coming through the ligule. That's probably the good advice. And at that point, you know you're gone past paintbrush and you're in the process of ear emergence. That's my preferable timing. But as I say, I would adjust it based on what I have done previously. Have I just recently put on a stopgap spray, or did I 4 weeks ago put on my first of two sprays? Because I can't afford to leave the crop completely unprotected.
Yeah, all right. Okay, Andy, anything else on the management front?
The other one probably, Stephen, is spring barley. I saw fields today of spring barley that were probably more advanced than the ones that I saw in parts of Munster last week. I'm guessing that they're probably growth stage 15, maybe even growth stage 30, just looking at them in passing. So you're at the time where you certainly would want to be thinking of a first fungicide on spring barley and beating back weeds as well, if that job is not already done. Certainly, I know some people have weed sprays already applied. Those crops, it's hard to know what the right thing to do for virus is. But I'm assuming that if I had a crop that is now has a good full green cover for some time, I'm assuming that the risk of BYDV in that crop, which was early sown and emerged, the risk to BYDV would be low. And I think I would want to be minimizing my use of insecticides rather than maximizing them to help preserve their efficacy long term. So only an aphicide where you know you need it because of risk, or where other people well positioned would advise that you do so.
Okay. All right, Andy, we'll move on now. In the interest of time, thanks for all of that. So, Andy, did you happen to see during the week that a new protein cereal mixed crop aid scheme was announced by Minister of Agriculture, Charlie McConlow? So the minister announced the details of a new €1.2 million protein cereal mixed crop scheme with the growing of seed mixes containing 50% or more of eligible legumes to receive €150 per hectare. So in other words, beans, peas and lupins are the protein crops eligible for the legume element of seed mixes, while the eligible cereals announced are wheat, oats, barley, rye and triticale. Minimum payment of €300 per hectare will still be paid for beans, peas and lupins under the protein aid scheme, so that's an entirely separate scheme. Those wishing to apply for the protein cereal mixed crop aid scheme, that's quite a mouthful, the protein aid scheme as well as the tillage incentive scheme should declare eligible crops on their 2022 DPS payments before the deadline of May 16th. Andy, where did this come out of?
Stephen, I'm guessing it's just another reiteration of ways to try and enhance or increase the overall amount of forage that was available. Forage and the replacement of protein, which is currently predominantly used in the form of soybean meal, which is expensive currently, but arguably set to become cheaper as the year progresses, as the feeding season progresses. As I read it, this is in a sense a formalized arable silage scheme, which many people would have used in the past as a mechanism for a reseed or as just an alternative higher protein forage crop for themselves, and generally grown by the people used by the people that grow it, or the people who grow it generally have been the users in the past. So it hasn't traditionally been a traded entity as such. You know, if you go to make silage from straight peas, you tend to have something that is maybe 16% crude protein in the forage, which is quite high in terms of its usefulness in the mix, but peas don't particularly like being in the silage pit on their own. It forms a real mush. There's not a lot of lignified strands in it to hold it together, and it's difficult. So people traditionally have put some form of grass or grasses in with the proteins to keep them in the pit, but B, also they complement one another in growing, providing that you don't need big amounts of herbicides, that you don't have a very dirty field, because you don't have too many options for weed control in a mix like that.
Yeah. I mean, is it not getting a bit late for this scheme?
It's getting late, but I would also say that a lot of people who use this in the past, it wouldn't have been the first thing they ever planted. But I would say, yes, it is late. You know, the value of any of these things, the earlier you plant, whatever it is you're planting, the earlier you plant, generally the greater the bulk you generate by a given point in time. And in that regard, it's getting late. But if, you know, if we're not going to have silage, then even a relatively small quantity of this product could be of great benefit to some people in the year ahead.
Yeah, and yet another support for the livestock sector, which look, obviously needs it, but still waiting for our support in the tillage end of things. But okay, we'll move on. So over the weekend, Andy Medairn issued what we think is their first blight warning of the year, certainly the first one across our desks. There were conditions which would have been conducive to the spread of potato blight, particularly in early sown crops in parts of Clare, Limerick, Kerry and Cork over the weekend. So I guess, Andy, in Crop Protection magazine this year, Stephen Kilday wrote a very good article on the new prediction models which Medairn are introducing, have been developing over the past few years to update their blight warning forecasts. Do we know, has that kicked in yet? And is this forecast being generated with their new model?
Stephen, that I don't know either. And I hadn't actually got notification, so I wasn't in a position to ask ahead of you asking me now. We do know that that Medairn, with funding from the Department of Agriculture, worked with Chagas to put in place a new model, which is more indicative of the biology of the modern strains of blight, and also more thorough in that it's taking a window of the present and a window of the future in terms of what the forecast is saying, to give its recommendations for risk, etc. So look, we've seen other people do something like this already, but it's always good when it's coming from an Irish research body, and also Medairn, you know, two credible organisations. So we kind of stand back and say, well, it'll be good when it's available. I don't know when it will be available, because it was my understanding that there was to be a formal launch when it was actually being introduced. And it's not because it's not finished. There were other technicalities that had to be ironed out at the time when we were going to press with the Crop Protection magazine, which meant that we weren't, in a sense, formally launching it then. But the quick answer to your question is, I just don't know. Mm. But even if it's still the old scheme, the new one has to be with us very, very shortly. And it will be better than the old one in terms of giving good advice to potato growers.
Okay, good stuff. And anyone interested in learning a little bit more about that new model, flick back to Crop Protection magazines, which is probably sitting in your spray tractor at this stage. Okay, moving on, the 2022 winners of the Arable April photo competition held by ourselves here in Irish Farmers Journal in conjunction with the Irish Grain Growers were announced during the week. So first place was Anne Eviston, and is based down in Tipperary, and she sent in a really good photograph of winter oilseed rape in flower on a crisp frosty morning in South Tipperary. You can check out that photograph in this week's paper. While we're here, we'll just mention the second place entry. That was Clinton Brownrigg. Clinton is down in Wicklow, and he snapped a photograph of himself direct drilling spring oats in the grass right under a full Easter moon. Another cracker of a photograph. And third place was Geroid Holland. Guide was in County Cork, and he took up third place for his photograph of Anthony O'Donovan. So and Me Is in the Evening Sun for Colin Griffin. Another good photograph. Check out those three photographs online, or the winner in this week's paper. So, Andy, moving on. Tagus are on the lookout for growers to respond to a survey for Italian ryegrass and blackgrass. What's this all about?
Stephen, look, we might all have thought that we've kind of read enough about Italian ryegrass and blackgrass over the past year. But, you know, the reality is we think that the weed problem, the menace, is still expanding. And it's expanding because lots of people are indifferent to it because they say, well, sure, look at this, nothing to do with me. I don't know anybody around here that has it, so we have no risk. In order to try and tackle that lack of information, Teagasc are trying to see if they can get growers all around the country to respond to the presence of grass weeds. And if we do that, then they would be in a better position to map the existence of grass weeds across different parts of all counties, which in a sense provides a risk tool to others in the area to say, well, look, it's not far away, so I better keep an eye out. Now, the real purpose of this is to subsequently cross-check these grass problems and see if there are resistance issues with them, be it target site or non-target site resistance. You know, in other words, difficulties with control using any of the modern chemistries. If people take the bother of filling up the survey, and it doesn't take long to complete it, if you fill it up, then somebody will contact you and you will get access to a significant resource that's already available on these weeds or for these weeds to help you either decide what you have or to take action against what you have if you have something. So it opens up a considerable resource to people. But I think a huge thing for Irish growers would be to be able to get a map of the incidence of these problems so that we can begin to tackle them at the edges to stop the further expansion. That's no small task, either from the point of view of generating the map or from the point of view of the guy trying to keep the weeds out of your land, which is otherwise clean. But it has to be done because we can't win this battle with sprayers or being able to spray, depending on sprayers, because we know full well that it takes as little as 3 years to actually induce resistance in either or both of those weeds, even if you start with 100% susceptible population. They're very adaptive stroke reactive weeds, and they will very quickly show decreased efficiency from any particular active that's used to try and control them in a given field. So repeated use of single sprays is almost a guarantee for to induce resistance in crops.
Okay. Well, look, Andy, I think that, you know, just suppose before we move on, there's an article in this week's paper on the Tillage pages about this survey. Where can growers go to actually fill it out?
Well, Stephen, I think the easiest place to start from would be actually to just get that page. Of course, you can go to the Teagasc website, but Teagasc have given us a QR code, which is one of these kind of postage stamp type devices that you scan with your phone. And if you scan that with your smartphone, as in take a photograph of it or turn on your scanning device, depending on how your phone is configured, it will bring you straight into the survey on the phone. You fill it up. It does not take long. You'll be asked for contact details because they, if you're saying you have a problem, they need to get back to you to come and check it out and to give you whatever information they can. But as a survey person or a person being surveyed, your details are confidential. So just because you have a problem or you think you have a problem that needs checking out doesn't mean that anybody else will know about it, other than that the details, if you do have a problem, would have to go on a map, which would have to warn us all.
Okay, good. That's a good point. So it is. Right, moving on, Andy. Markets-wise, this week, what's been happening? I gather there has been yet more gains.
Yes, Stephen, things got pretty lively since we recorded last Thursday morning. I think on Thursday morning there was life in the market when we were doing our podcast, but they certainly went on a good ways after that. Markets closed last Friday at 390. I think on the Tuesday night prior to we doing last week's podcast, I think it was 378 a ton. It closed that week at 390. Today, Wednesday, as we're talking, it's up 525, currently trading around 395. And, you know, the prices that I'm kind of getting for grains in the trade would be 390, 395. Now, I will also say that the price of 395 has already been higher today. So it's not at its highest, but it continues to want to rise for the time being. But I think it's worth noting or stating that as I look at the screen in front of me now, December 22 wheat is reading 395.25. The May contract has gone off the screen, but the September contract is now reading 401.75. So the gap between a forward contract for old crop and a forward contract for new crop has become extremely small. It's now only 650 a ton. 2 months ago, that was reading 90 euro a ton, albeit for a different point in time, but the gap was much bigger. So look, we would have said all along that the gap between old and new crop can be solved by new crop rising, old crop falling, or a combination of both. This year, it looks like it's a combination of both, but the biggest adjustment has come from new crop rising. How much further it can go or will go, only time will tell. But, you know, we have to be conscious that these products are now getting so expensive that their use is going to significantly decrease. And a deficit can quickly turn into a surplus. And we know how that does for market conditions.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And then just on those raises over the past week, is that being reflected in any forward prices for harvest being offered in Ireland?
Yes, Stephen, I said a second ago that the forward price now for wheat for December, that's in the Irish trade, had moved up to between 390 and 395, depending on the day. Yeah, now today, you could see people kind of saying, well, look, it's 395 and it could even be 400. Depending on who your merchant or dealer is, but that's kind of where it's gone. There's still a hunger for it. I might add that one of the major drivers for the rise last week. One was the reduction in the estimated harvest size of the Indian wheat crop, which would have been about 106 odd million tons. Actually, 111 million tons. It was reduced by 6 million tonnes last week as a consequence of the very hot weather that occurred in March, which would be close to flowering time in a place like India. And hot weather at flowering, we all know the potential negative effects it can have. Or maybe we don't know, but it's one of the biggest ills of fertilising crops. All fertilising cereal crops is very high temperatures during flowering. In Ireland, we like to see warm temperatures by Irish standards during flowering. But when that temperature kind of sneaks up to above 30 and above 35, the effect on the fertility during flowering can be very negative. And that's where some of these reductions have come from. The other one that has actually emerged, and it kind of sneaked up on me a little bit, is that there's question marks being asked over the size of the French crop within Europe. Again, because of weather issues. And actually weather issues that are happening now with extreme heat, again, having a potential risk for flowering wheat. So look, they're two of the main drivers. They're not the only drivers. There are also issues there for maize. But maize as an entity, maize is holding relatively flat for the past number of weeks, while wheats and barleys are increasing. And that's generating concerns in the market that, barley keeps getting expensive. Who's going to buy it? And that's kind of one of the real worries that we have now. And indeed, occasionally when I watch the quotes, A lot of the time, the difference between wheat and barley for harvest and after is about a tenner between the two. Occasionally, you'll see that now swelling to €15, as guys are trying to see, well, where can I sell barley if maize is going to cost €2.55 and barley is, in theory, getting €2.75.
Mm. Okay. All right, Andy. Watch this space.
And Stephen, I should say 3.75 for barley, not 2.75. With barley, with maize being 3.55, if I said 2.55.
Yeah, not much between them. So there's not. All right, Andy, good stuff. We'll move on and wrap things up with the weather. So what have midair in store for us for the week ahead?
Well, looking at the forecast, on the face of it, it's not bad at all for most areas. Again, Stephen, you might just stand out there as being slightly adrift of normal, but in actual fact, the northeast is not a whole lot different in terms of the number of dry days. But what is different is the amount of rainfall that's on the radar for them. Monday of next week is currently forecast to be a wet day, and a very wet day in parts next week. Tuesday, also a wet day. The rest of this week and maybe Wednesday of next week and possibly beyond that may not be so wet or may even be good and dry. So look at some wet days, some dry days, a chance to get work done. That's kind of the bottom line. Wind speeds a tad on the high side on a number of days going forward. So, you know, you have to be careful to watch that the day that's forecast to be dry for you wouldn't coincide with very high wind speeds, because that's a potential risk. And I have had queries in the past couple of days from people, just ordinary people, non-farmers, complaining about the fact that their house and land and property and food and washing had been swept through by active spray drift from a neighbouring field. You know, we do have to try and avoid that because it's not press that we particularly want. Temperatures very definitely rising against, even looking at 16s, 17s and 18s in the forecast. And against the background, a week ago, we might have been talking about 40 and 15s and 16s, but their average maximum temperatures, we know that individual areas are 2 or 3 degrees above that. So if you started to push it to 20 and above, for the likes of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday of next week, if they weren't going to be too wet, they might be very nice days. That's pretty much a summary of what's there, Stephen. One other thing I suppose that's worth noting is that kind of at the weekend, particularly Sunday through to Tuesday forenoon, the wind is coming out of the east again. So there could be a level of harshness about it, even though the temperatures are forecast to be high. But if it's not going to be hashed, then it'll probably be a strong drying wind, except for the fact that the rain is forecast. So okay, look, it's hard to know what average comment I can make for them.
All right. Thank you for that. And thank you to Matt Aaron, as always. So there, we're going to have to leave it for another week. So from Andy and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.